We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Why, oh why, didn't I take the blue pill?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tackling life's most important questions. This is the Don Johnson Show.
Quick poll. How many of you would go out with a guy who was afraid of spiders? This is what I want to know. Before the show, Timory shared something about this gentleman she's been seeing. And you know, we've already had issues with him, Timory. We've already had issues with him because of the book thing.
I usually don't share stuff on there, too. You're ratting me out here, man. You know, it's so funny. I was telling a story about... And I'm going to have to tell him I told a friend a story now. Thanks, Don. I was telling a friend a story about a spider and how he does not do well with spiders. And my friend hasn't met him. We've been together a long time. And she's like, man, I think I really need to meet him. Like, this story is really, like, discrediting because he's a pretty, like, big guy. He looks tough. And the fact that he was so scared of the spider, man.
Well, welcome, everyone, to the Don Johnson Show. That's Timory Millington, my co-host. So here's the context to this whole conversation. Timory was doing so well. We had just recorded another show, and she gently is like, can we pause for a second? I think I have a spider in my headset. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. If I thought I had a spider in my ear, I'd be so far gone. I'd be down the stairs halfway across Orange County. And she was just so good. And
it was like a tickle, and it was just the sound. The cord was messing up, but it like felt like something attacked my ear.
Oh, no. I do not do well with that stuff. Bats. Spiders, bugs, and mites. No. So, good job, Timory. And on this one, you know, I may have had an issue with your boyfriend regarding the books, but on this one, it's no problem.
It's totally
fine to be scared of spiders.
Poor guy doesn't know he's being talked about. He's amazing.
Oh, I love talking about friends and family on the air, and they enjoy it too. It is good to have you here today. Thanks for joining us. Before we get into our topics, and we have a lot of them to talk about, let me just remind you, in case you're joining us for the first time, or maybe you missed last week's show. So Timory is here as a co-host, and I've joined her as a co-host on Hearts and Minds, which is the show that you used to do, Timory, with Trent Horn,
yes,
our friend from Catholic Answers. Well, we're joining together on those two shows, and I would just ask that you would stay tuned, especially next week. Probably we'll have a big announcement, and if you would like to continue listening, you'll want to pay attention at that time so we can point you in the right direction, because
I feel like we should be offering like some sort of prize for someone who guesses what's coming, but we're not going to.
Yeah,
but you can make your predictions on Twitter.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Find Tim. What's your Twitter?
At Timory.
And I am at Don Johnson Show on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook,
yes,
Instagram. I know you're a much better Instagrammer.
I love Instagram. It's my favorite.
I need to get better at
it. It's okay. I'll tag you, Don.
Yeah,
don't worry.
See, you know, I've got my daughters, you know, on,
aww,
you know, following me. That's about
your beautiful family.
Anyway, so speaking of family, my kids are looking forward to a couple of movies, and my one daughter saw one. I want to get your take on these movies that are out, because this is, mm-hmm, causing some controversy in the Christian community and
so frustrating,
the culture as a whole. So one is The Beauty and the Beast. And I suspect, correct me if I'm wrong, Timory, but as a dancer, as someone who likes costumes,
yes,
I suspect you're looking forward to this film.
I love Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
My prom dress basically looked like Belle.
Really?
Yeah.
See? I sort of anticipated, and it looks fantastic.
Well, and if anyone remembers, I remember like 3 years ago, maybe it was only two, they had a teaser for Beauty and the Beast, and it was so, like, it was such a teaser. Everyone was looking forward to it. We knew Emma Watson was the main star. I think this has been one of those movies people have been really excited about.
And again, it looks really good. Like, I'm pretty confident. Is it out yet? I haven't.
It comes out this week.
Okay, so when you're listening to this, it's probably coming out tonight. It looks like one of those movies that you're really going to enjoy. The previews, the early reviews look good. But of course, the big controversy is that there is, and I'm not using my terms. This is a term from the Disney person who was,
yes,
involved, calls it an exclusively gay moment, a nice exclusively gay moment,
yes,
in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Between, I don't even, do you know what characters it is?
It's one of the Gaston and like his sidekick person, essentially.
Okay. And so What? It's just so tiring. You know what I mean? It's so tiring to have to.
I think people are more upset about this too right now, because while the people behind Beauty and the Beast have said it's a gay moment, it sounds like it's very brief from what I understand. It doesn't sound like it's that big of a deal from what I understand. And I'm one to get frustrated over this.
Right, right.
I think at the same time, people are very upset as well, because there was recently a similar moment in a child's Disney cartoon where there were a number of same-sex attracted couples kissing. And, you know, I've got to say, Don, I think that this actually irked me a little bit more so, because I was out, this is kind of changing it a little bit. I was out to lunch with a friend a couple weeks ago. We're at this restaurant. We're so nice catching up, and we're in this sitting room, and the tables are like claustrophobically close together.
Yeah.
Food's worth it. And there's a couple next to us, and they end up being a couple, lesbian couple, and they were making out, rubbing each other's faces. I mean, talk about PDA, whether you were heterosexual or homosexual, there was like way too much going on to the point of like extreme discomfort. And they sat down at almost the same time as us. And I just had to keep my eye in contact with my friend. I had to not be rude. I had to. It was really tough. And my friend, who's actually pretty like lenient in that area, not that she's like super into it at all, but is more lenient and probably more quick to be like, oh, we shouldn't bug them, or they're fine, they love each other. Even though she understands, you know, what the church teaches. She's more lenient. She was actually getting really upset and was very frustrated.
That seems like it's almost like just, it doesn't matter that you're gay or not. That's just like, come on now. We're in a restaurant.
Yeah. And what was sad is that they really felt like they were trying to prove a point. And I say that because I think that this is what Disney is starting to try to do. They've given in to the LGBTQ community that is pressuring mainstream Hollywood very hard to have gay stories developing throughout every television show that is ongoing. We see this in a lot of the superhero TV shows.
You see it in literally every show. Yeah. I was watching Timeless the other night. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for time travel, all right? So, I was back in the day, I was watching Quantum Leap. I always liked the time travel shows. And out of nowhere, this it was absolutely completely irrelevant to the plot. In fact, it was detrimental to the plot, because it was this gentleman back in the 50s who had a family, and they found the guy cheating on his wife, essentially, in a gay bar. No reason for him at all. And the whole point of the little episode was, oh, you're not doing anything wrong. Well, again, this has nothing to do with gay or not gay, for one thing. You're cheating on your wife and your kids are at home. You're not taking care of them. You're out with somebody else. That's bad. But why is the guy gay? There's characters pop in. The pressure, you're right. The pressure
is unreal for Hollywood right now.
Or maybe they're the ones just pressuring themselves. I think of Disney. Now, we're literally a couple of blocks from Disneyland at the moment.
Right,
it's
here.
Just right here as we broadcast from
Disneyland
our studio.
Too.
And it's a wonderful place. And actually, this plays into, I think, the danger, if you will, or the powerfulness of the Beauty and the Beast thing. Mm-hmm. But just to throw it out there, Disney has long been a place locally here where you did have a lot of gays working. They were very accepting. They were giving
huge events for Gay Pride
giving
Gay
rights
Pride Week.
To the just saying, it might not be so much external pressure as just internally.
Yes.
This is what we want to produce. We want to pressure you as a culture.
Well, and I think in general, Don, people have this attitude that we want to show stories of love. And people are trying not to exclude other people who love each other. Just like my friend, I think, feels bad saying, if you can't love someone, why can't I tell you not to love someone? And I think you can love someone, but there's also a way to love them sacrificially that's in their best interest.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, ultimately, if the homosexual lifestyle was equivalent, if you could live as flourishing a life in that lifestyle, then I think the Christian position would be, well, okay, I'm not sure what we're standing on other than the ancient text. That's not the case. Ultimately, this is propaganda. I hate to say, as much as you might find one or two, anecdotal stories of long-term relationships. I get that. Predominantly, the homosexual lifestyle is one of loneliness.
Yes.
It's one of abuse. It's one of using each other for physical pleasure.
Yes.
It's not one of monogamy. It's not one of long-term relationships. This is simply a fact. It's
yes.
not it's not spoken of. It's simply a fact.
And if you doubt this, really, go watch videos like Desire of the Everlasting Hills. It's on Vimeo, or The Third Way, or also just people's stories of those you know. I mean, we talked about Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yes, absolutely.
Last week. I think these are examples. If you listen to their stories, it has a tremendous amount of brokenness at times, and they're struggling, just like you and I.
Yeah, there's another good writer. He creates videos as well. Joe Sciambra, I think is his name. I'm looking for it at the moment. Yes, Joseph Sciambra. I hope I'm saying that right.
Sciambra.
I believe he was formerly in the gay porn business. He has a lot of contacts. Very outspoken now about the realities of the gay lifestyle. Strong practicing Catholic now. And these are the facts. And so it's not like we're putting up two equal pictures of love and flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's propaganda, it's lies, but it's very effective. And this is sort of why, as much as, it's a small part in the movie.
Well, but these are children we're talking about,
Don. Children, and it's Disney.
Well, and that's where I had to pull back, because I'm trying, really hard as we're dealing with this issue. We're in whole new waters, and anyone listening, please understand this gender ideology is... This is a new territory, and we're having to learn how to carefully walk around it at the same time as being loving and not judgmental, but true, right?
Yeah, right.
And as kids are having to deal with this. And I think that, at first I thought, wow, people are boycotting Beauty and the Beast. Well, I think there's some legitimacy when there are young children involved in particular.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about this after the break. But when it comes to film and Disney... It affects people in a particular way, and this is what I think we really need to understand when it comes to these media things. How do movies work? How do they influence us? You're listening to The Don Johnson Show with Timmarie Millington. We will be right back after this short break. Stick around. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Don Johnson Show with Timmarie Millington. We are talking about, as you might have expected if you're paying attention to the news, Beauty and the Beast. This what looks to be a fantastically produced film, Timmarie. I mean, I think the story's going to be great. I'm sure Disney pulled out all the stops. They're generally good storytellers anyway.
It's a princess come to real life.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. I mean, this is something I can watch, and I don't have to go watch a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. It looks really good. Of course... It's got the what they're calling the exclusively gay moment.
Yes.
And, you said it, Timmarie. It's like, it's a small thing. Do we want to be so prudish and uptight?
And I say it's a small thing now, Don, because as we mentioned before the break, so many different shows have these moments that in comparison, from what I understand, it is a really much smaller moment than
right.
a lot of the daily television shows that we're now seeing same-sex couples in our faces.
And it is in our faces. I mean, I watch... Our kids don't watch a ton of television. We're pretty strict, I feel like, compared to the culture in general. And when we do, we tend to try to watch it with them. So, for instance, I talked about The Voice. We like the singing competitions. Well, there's always some sort of exclusively very gay character. And I call them characters because the stories sometimes are a little... I don't want to be too cynical, but they up the stories. Or things like that show where they run around the world, The Amazing Race.
Amazing Race,
yeah.
yes.
Always.
Do they still air that show?
I think, I don't know, maybe not anymore.
Seen it in like 10
Last
years.
Year there was.
I don't know.
But there's always a gay couple.
Okay.
It's always in your face.
Yes, that's true.
Always.
That's true.
And so my 6-year-old, understands. Anyway, all that to say, you're right. It's probably less than that.
Yes.
But here's the thing. Here's how movies work, and this is why I'm concerned. In fact, I'm more concerned, and this is I want to sort of bring this in as a side note. The other big movie this week is The Shack, which is, I think, raking in the money. It's another very well-produced movie.
Yeah, it came out a few weeks ago. I've heard a little about it.
And it is, again, another really well-produced story. But Christians are having some few issues because...
Questions about God.
There's questions about God and what they're teaching in the movie. But here's the thing. Here's one of the reactions that I've seen among my friends towards Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to take our kids to it. It's going to be okay. And afterwards, we'll have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And I think, okay, fair enough. And they say the same thing about The Shack. And I guess I should back it. So The Shack is about a man who has intense pain. His daughter is murdered. And he's very angry at God. He's despondent. And the God character, which is played, the Trinity, is played in this movie by a wonderful actress whose name escapes me at the moment. Black lady, and the Holy Spirit is an Asian lady, I believe, and Jesus is a Middle Eastern man, which seems fair enough. Anyway, this was a huge book years ago.
Yes.
I read the book years ago.
Haven't seen it. Is it a good book?
Well, here's the thing with these. The writing was not necessarily my style. Mm-hmm. I wasn't taken too much by the story, but I understood why people enjoyed it.
Okay, because it was very popular I understand. Oh, he self-published, too, so it was like sensationalized the fact that it became as popular as it had.
It's 10 million copies. I mean, it's huge.
Yep.
And the thing is, with these stories, and it's accentuated with movies, but with stories like that, as I understand them, and now as a filmmaker and as an author, here's what I'm trying to do with my movie. I want to make you feel a certain way. And I want to make you feel a certain way towards certain people and certain ideas. That's my goal as a movie maker. I'm not going to teach you anything. We're not, you can watch the entire movie of Convinced, and it's an apologetics movie, but you will not see one section. Actually, no, I'll take that back. There's about 20 seconds of didactic teaching in the whole movie. It's from a sociologist. That's the limit. The rest is entire story.
But what happens with that is that the movie decides for you because it makes you feel a certain way.
Well, a good movie does, right? Yes. A bad movie, you go away thinking, I don't know what that was about, and I don't feel anything. I'm bored.
Yes.
A good movie makes you feel a certain way towards something. Mm-hmm. Now, you can disagree. Here's where, when I knew I was, that, God had made my movie decent. When we had the premiere, everyone poured out just so happy to be Catholic. They were just joyful.
Yes.
It wasn't that I came out, I learned something new.
It
was the emotion. It was just the joy on their face. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes, that is exactly what. People crying in the middle of the movie. People laughing in the middle of the movie. I don't want you thinking about stuff necessarily, although you are. Mm-hmm. I need that emotional response or else it's not a good movie.
Well, okay? And that just shows the difference between reading a book and watching a show. A lot of the time when you're watching a show, you're just sitting and receiving versus
it's
reading
very
a book.
Passive.
It's
absolutely
active. And I noticed that I've been trying to read a little bit more, and I was saying, I'm thinking all the time about the storyline. I haven't been doing that with TV, as I've probably, for entertainment purposes, watched more TV rather than read books the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. So all that to say, I'm actually less concerned about the movie version of The Shack.
Okay.
Then I am the book version.
And
the book version, I was, there's some bad theology in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not overwhelming. I mean, it is sort of.
I just say sometimes you have to go, at least there's a Christian element as long as it's not being something horrible,
My daughter went to see The Shack the other day and she loved it. And she's a pretty smart girl. She's pretty well versed in doctrine. Mm-hmm. And my mom, who is, no heretic, right? I mean, she knows her Bible better than anybody. She loved The Shack. Okay. But here's the thing. You walk away from The Shack with a feeling of God loves me even when my life is terrible.
And
that's the emotion.
Yeah.
Now, that's true.
Yes.
Okay? That's a good feeling to have. It's a good emotion. Am I saying The Shack is perfect? Absolutely not. There's a bunch of silly stuff in there. So you might say, well, okay, we're going to go see The Shack, and then we're going to have a chat about it after. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, we can, but you know what? It's not going to matter. Right?
Yes.
It's actually not going to matter.
And also, you're not pre-screening what that scene's like. And that's kind of how I feel with Beauty and the Beast. You need to pre-screen something.
Well, but here's the thing with Beauty and the Beast. Here's why I think those who say, we're going to go see Beauty and the Beast and then we're going to have a chat about it after. It's the same thing as with The Shack. You're going to walk away from Beauty and the Beast cheering and feeling good about the love story with whoever those characters are.
Yeah.
That's going to be your feeling. Going and chatting about it after isn't going to do a whole lot, I'm afraid to say.
Because the story's already influenced you. You've had a positive experience. Well, why do you have to go and ruin it? Or why do we have to talk about this? But also, I think in this case, from what I understand the scene is, it's so minimal that I think it'll go over most people's heads.
Well,
I don't want to ruin it
for
anyone.
But that's the thing. It's not a matter of going over your head. Yeah, it's going to go over your head.
Yeah.
But you'll feel it.
You'll feel it. That is true.
And the kids will absolutely feel it. Okay.
Yes. Well, and this is where I think we have to come back to the question of, and I hate calling it a boycott sometimes. I think it's the choice whether or not we see it. Maybe you sign a boycott. I know there's one that's going around pledge or a couple hundred thousand people. But I think at the end of the day, it's a choice to or not to show something. And I think it comes down to that.
Well, and understand what the movie's going to do. What any media. See, this is the thing. Like, we inundate our kids with all sorts of media. and say, oh, well, what are the ideas there? You know, yes. You're looking at it very linearly, very intellectually. No, it's not. It's not the ideas that were presented. It's the feelings that they felt.
Yes.
And so here's what you do. You look at a movie if you want to know, how's this affecting my kid? And I think one of the worst movies ever, and I don't know that I've ever seen it, but there's a movie out called Mean Girls. Okay. Have you seen Mean Girls?
I have seen Mean Girls, okay, help, and I feel help. Bad saying that sometimes.
Well, no, me out, Timory.
Yeah, I think a lot of people love it. But what's your point about
well,
it?
Well, who's
Lindsay Lohan.
What's Lindsay Lohan's character arc in the movie? What does she start out as, and what does she end up as?
Not popular to popular,
okay.
Essentially.
Not popular to popular, and this is a good thing for her to become popular, am I right? Mm-hmm. So you're cheering for Lindsay to become popular. You want her to become accepted. I believe at the beginning, isn't she a homeschooler?
I can't remember. It's been a while.
I believe.
Okay, I
wouldn't
be surprised.
I think she starts out as a homeschooler.
Poor homeschoolers. No wonder we have this reputation.
Well, hey, and you think, yeah, but I'm as a homeschooler, I swear I am dealing with that every single day because the culture tells my kids and it tells my girls who are teenagers in movies like Mean Girls, it makes them feel less than cool to be a homeschooler.
You have to be a plastic. Right? Because that's what the girls are called, the group that she gets into, the plastics. You have to have this persona of being very uppity, being very wealthy, or presenting yourself that way, being open to any sexual experience, making fun of people. And I have to tell you, this is what's very regularly done to a huge extent, more so now in high school than even when I was a kid. And it is unbelievable. They have the burn book in Mean Girls. The burn book. A couple years ago, we talked about this on Hearts and Minds. There was a real life burn book that was an app, and there were other apps like it. And let me tell you something. And this is where it hits a sensitive moment. My siblings were a huge topic of conversation on their school's burn book type of application.
Yeah,
and the harm that was done and the things that were said were total lies, but they were so atrocious, Don. I couldn't believe a child that age would even repeat that. And some of these kids were in middle school.
And where are they getting that notion that they would have it, right? I'm saying not the only place, but one of the places they're getting that is from the media that they've consumed that gives you the emotion, oh, we don't like that kind of person. I don't want to be that kind of person, or we make fun of those kind of people. The emotional play on kids from those stories, I'm just throwing this out there. As a parent, that's what you need to be concerned about. Don't be so concerned about, you know, a small piece of didactic teaching in a movie or how long. It's the feeling. It's the who's the hero of the story? What is that hero like? Who's the bad person in the story? Mm-hmm. Who's the enemy? Often today, the enemies in these stories are, you know, very conservative Christian types or whatever, right?
Yep.
They're very judgmental. Sure. I think of that crazy movie Pleasantville. You remember Pleasantville? Okay, we're going to have to talk more about this after the break. And we're going to get into this hyper-judgmentalism because you're right. We talk about, oh, we're such an easygoing society now, right? We don't judge each other. Oh, really? Yeah, tell that to the people in the burn book, right? I mean, it's so sick.
Yes. But you know what, Don, before we kind of change topics here, one thing that keeps coming to me with this idea, you say, you know, it's going to have an emotional feeling for the kids. I think it comes back, reverse it. Are they formed enough when they see it
That's
to
right.
know right and wrong? Because if they are not, they should not see it. If you have to talk about it afterward, they should not be seeing the movie. And I think that's a principle for myself.
All right, more on this when we come back. You're listening to The Don Johnson Show with Timory Millington. Don't forget to go to donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com during this break to find out more about us and get linked to all sorts of wonderful resources. We'll be right back. Stick around. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Timory Millington, my co-host. Please, if you're just joining us and didn't hear, please stay tuned in the upcoming weeks for major news announcements involving this show and Timory and some cool new stuff we got going on. So go to timmery.com or donjohnsonministries.org, or just continue to listen to this podcast.
This is huge. In the words of our president.
Huge. I don't have a good Donald Trump.
I don't either.
I'm the only person in the country who doesn't have a Donald Trump.
Did
maybe
I have
you
a good
and I.
Day?
Yeah, maybe yeah, you and I are the only ones. So we're talking a little bit, Timmery, about the movies that are out lately and how are we to approach them. And of course, Beauty and the Beast is a major cultural landmark in many ways. I mean, you grew up, when did the original animation come out? I mean, you're kind of right in that sweet spot.
Pretty close. I was there for a lot of the good princess movies.
Yeah, and my kids, you know, I've got three girls. They love the princesses. They've grown up with the princesses. And
91.
So there you go. And Disneyland is just down the street, and we've spent a lot of time at Disneyland. I mean, there's this whole cultural thing that's going along with this now push towards a celebration of the gay lifestyle. Well, how are we to do that? And I've sort of warned, and Timmery did too before the break, I thought you brought up a good principle, the slipping it in to Beauty and the Beast, this classic love story. And really, Beauty and the Beast is this wonderful classic story. You know, when Shrek came out, it was the anti-Beauty and the Beast, right? Classically.
Are you talking about the ogres?
Yeah, well, because, and indeed, DreamWorks was the anti-Disney at the time. And yeah, let's go a little side note here. This is kind of fun. So what's the story of Beauty and the Beast? As the Beast finds true love, he gets transformed into the beautiful prince. Right?
Yep.
That's the whole bait. And that's sort of the redemptive arc in
most...
Did you call
him a beautiful prince? I think you called him a beautiful
prince. Is
that
the right handsome?
Handsome prince.
You're right. I probably
Sorry,
did.
Sorry,
I'm teasing you. Well, yes. We could call it Beauty and the Beautiful Prince.
Sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great.
So the handsome prince... That's sort of the redemptive arc in most of those classic princess stories, right?
Yes.
Like you become beautiful. You look
inside.
On the inside, and it's displayed on the outside.
Yes, exactly.
That there's some deformity, there's some problems, but true love heals that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, indeed, that's true.
It draws out the best in us, or it should.
Well, but that's ultimately true. Like that's God's story. Like we were made for true love.
Mm-hmm.
We've been deformed. Guess what heals us? Guess what transforms us into the handsome or beautiful person that we were intended, that we were created to be?
Yes.
Right? Is true love. And so there's much, much to be committed. And frankly, it's a story that's been retold for all time.
You know what's funny about you bringing that up is anyone who remembers Cinderella that came out, 3 years ago? I wrote a blog on this. Please go read it on my website from a few years ago, because I loved Cinderella. And at first time I saw it, when I walked out, I'm like, I really disliked that movie. It was so cheesy. It was just like not what I was expecting. And what I loved about it was the virtue of Cinderella's character.
Hmm.
It was so profound in the whole story. And I think that was something so much so to be appreciated that I know people who went and saw it over and over again because it was such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
It's sad now that we have Beauty and the Beast and something that could be such a fantastic life lesson of a story, what you're saying here, is now pushing in this LGBTQ agenda.
Right, and thrown in a little side note.
Yes.
Yeah, well, and it goes with the culture in general now sort of recoils against the notion that we were made to be beautiful, that we were made to be handsome, virtuous, that... true love is what accomplishes that. Now, a lot of the stories that come out, and Shrek was sort of a bellwether. So Shrek was the idea that, no, I'm an ogre, and that's who I'm meant to be, and she actually turns ugly or stays ugly, right? Like, it was the anti-Beauty and the Beast.
I never thought about that before.
Yeah, no, it was, you look at the old DreamWorks interviews, that's what they were after. They were after the anti-fairy tale. But that is the cultural thing, like, oh, no. The ugliness, whatever it is you are inside, all of that, we just accept it. There's no judging. There's no becoming better. There's no becoming virtuous.
Wow.
You accept.
That's profound.
You accept that what everyone else calls ugly?
Mm-hmm.
No. That's not ugly. Now, on one level, of course, there's an element of truth. Like, you shouldn't be called ugly based on somebody else's subjective appearances.
Yes.
But there's something below there. There's something below there in that... classically, those stories knew that we were fallen, that there was something ugly inside of us, that we needed to be cured of. We needed to be healed of that. And true love comes along and heals us. The love of God, ultimately. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Those Shrek stories and everything since has twisted that, saying, no, No, you stay ugly. You celebrate the ugliness. You celebrate being bad. In fact, there's some...
And
there's
it this... focuses on that the two can coexist, but justifies the ugly that we have in our characteristics.
There's no need to transform, right? Yeah. There's no need to become a princess. Yes. No, no, no. That's just a cultural...
You're good enough as you are.
Yeah, that's a cultural stereotype. So whatever it is you have, you know, forget that. Get rid of that guilt. Get rid of all that stuff. In fact, the movie Descendants, or there's a series Descendants that celebrates the children of the evil people, all the evil characters in Disney, right? Celebrating how bad they can be, right? It's turned all of the classic Disney on its head.
Yes.
And so I just think as parents, or maybe you're, you know, enjoying this, you're not a parent, but you enjoy these stories, just realize what these stories are now saying and what emotion. Like, I've had to catch my own kids talking about villains. They're playing with Disney characters, and I'm like, they're going to be the villain. I'm like, hold on, what? Why are you going to be the villain? What?
Well, someone has to be
dad. I get that. You're right. You know, and, yes. And you know, like, I'm sure that, you know, as a kid, I played Darth Vader or whatever. But you know what? When you watch the movies, you never cheered for Darth Vader.
And that's the problem. You're right. We do see the celebration of the villain anymore. People love the villain.
They cheer for them.
Yes. And is it because it's a good character, or is it because they like the darkness that's there?
That's the question. And well, what do you mean about darkness, Timory? I mean, who are we to really call anything darkness, right? And all, there's a whole lot of stuff going on underneath. So just to sort of back up, I would just, you know, be aware that it's the emotions. It's who are the kids cheering for?
Yes.
That you really need to be more concerned about, I feel like.
And I'm going to throw this out here as a forewarning. It's nothing confirmed, but it's a possibility. And I think this is going to be something we see more often. Disney is in their conversations, and in some of their producers from the different shows are talking about how they're looking at having a gay princess coming up. Princess who is gay. And they're saying that it will possibly be in the sequel, as Elsa from Frozen will be that first princess story. I think we got to be prepared. Sorry.
Yeah, right. So I would ask, do you fight a battle now?
Prepare them.
And
yeah, prepare your kids.
And prepare. Or do you fight a much harder battle later? If you've just accepted everything, and I have no doubt. I mean, I hope it's not Elsa. I really hope it's not Elsa.
I hope so. I was not a big
fan of Frozen as everyone else was.
Don't like the song Let It Go?
Oh, no, I love the song Let It Go.
I love that song more than the movie, actually.
Oh, the songs were great. Go on. The story, you know, I wasn't so thrilled about the story. The songs are fantastic. But, yeah, think about this. So what if Elsa comes out as gay? I think that's an excellent point.
I wouldn't watch it, and I would be done with it.
And so, there's a line. And so maybe ask yourself, okay, if I know that that's going to be my line, do I pull the line a little bit closer now? Like, am I a little bit more aware? Like, I personally doubt we're, you know, going to go pay and see Beauty and the Beast. I just don't see that happening. I'm not saying maybe we don't catch it later on.
Yeah.
Or maybe just
it.
With the older
kid. I will. But I'm also not taking a kid. Yeah. I wouldn't take a kid.
Well, that's right. You're also, I mean, I watch a ton of things that I think, you know, I'm not going to let the kid watch. Yeah. Some of it's for research, and some of it I watch and I'm like, oh, well, I'm not watching that anymore.
There are lines that we draw that we will never watch, but there are things that we see that have a bad influence necessarily that we're learning for the purpose of responding.
Because can someone tell me why in all of these Netflix shows, and because I'm one, I know I'm not watching any HBO stuff. I'm sure the storytelling is fantastic, but why does everybody need to be naked in these shows?
I refuse to watch it. And I think someone was just talking to me the other day about a show they're watching on HBO that I know is really pornographic. And I was flabbergasted that they were watching
so
it.
So judgmental, Tim. Judgmental.
And you know what?
I have exactly the same.
There's a line.
I'm like, come on now.
And I love fantasy. I love history. There are shows that I would love to watch. The Tudors was one of them.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I would have loved to watch that show. And I'm not condemning anyone who watches it, but man, it was too much. I drew the line and said, I'm not watching it.
Yeah,
we
tried something on, I'm trying to think where it was, Netflix or Amazon the other day. And, you know, it's these little nude scenes. Yeah. I wasn't expecting. I didn't realize it was a new show for me. It was totally unnecessary for the plot.
Yes.
Absolutely gratuitous. Absolutely just to make men think about, okay, when is the nude scene in this show going to be there? I can think of no other reason why this scene was in there. other than to have people expect, oh yeah, if I watch that, I'm going to get a little bit of titillation or something. It's so, I mean, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's really challenging.
And I would, again, I'm with you, Timmy. I'm like, where is your line? If you think you're strong enough to watch those things, I would just ask, okay, where is your line? You're going to tune into pornographic websites?
Yeah.
And you think you're strong enough for that, and then shut it off. And then I would apply that principle then, if you've got kids, to your kids. Because you're the gatekeeper for them. They're not deciding. Mm-hmm. You're the one. If you think, well, I'm strong enough here, but not here. Okay, I'm glad you know you've reached that point. I certainly have a line for myself. And over the years, frankly, it's gotten stricter, if
yes.
you will, right? Like I'm not. It's not that I'm growing stronger and more mature, and I can take more, you know, naked pictures of women. I like. I want less, frankly, right? Because it's going to help my relationship with my
more
wife.
More clothing, less.
Yeah, exactly. Give
more
me more
clothing. Less of the nudity.
But you think about for your kids, right? Well, what line are you giving to them?
Yeah.
I just think, you
we've
got
to teach them principles so that when they are on their phones and it pops right up, that pornography, they don't go, oh, well, it was on the TV the other night. We just changed the channel, right?
That is an excellent point.
We've got to form them so that they're prepared. Because let me tell you, these little boys in particular have it slammed in front of them on all of their technology. They are targeted.
That's an excellent point, and we have to discuss that more after the break. All right, you're listening to The Don Johnson Show with Timmery Millington. During this break, don't forget to go to donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Don Johnson Show with Timmery Millington. We've been talking about movies, The Beauty and the Beast, The Shack, all of these controversial films that are going to make a lot of money and cause some consternation for parents. The Shack, I don't know, just to finish up that, I don't know if we really finished up that conversation.
Yes.
So for me, The Shack leaves you with a feeling that God loves you even in the midst of heartache.
Yes.
Well, this is certainly true. This mm-hmm. is the lesson of Job. This is the lesson of Scripture really from beginning to end. And so I don't have a huge problem. I think you're going to be okay.
This concern, though, Don, and I see where it's at, and I think it just takes a little bit of drawing out. The fact that the Trinity seems to be represented as a black woman, right?
Yeah.
An Asian woman and a Middle Eastern man confuses some people. Well, what is the Trinity? What is God? And some people are saying, well, God can choose to reveal himself in whatever way he wants to you. And it begins to justify, well, my reality is my reality and yours is yours, or my idea of faith is mine. And I hear even a lot of good-willed Catholic people say this. Well, I had this dream and this is what I believe about God. But at the end of the day, we have to match, is what this vision or what this idea of God that you had consistent with the revelation of God in his church? And also we have to recognize that God has already revealed everything that is necessary for our salvation. We read about this in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. There's nothing additional that is necessary. For example, the rosary, that's not necessary for our salvation. While it can aid it, that is an added practice within the church.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, if you really wanted to get a clear picture of how God deals with suffering, read Job. I mean, we've got a great story already there. And so you're absolutely right. And, you know, we've both got advanced degrees in theology. And so, we've read the Bible a lot. There is a lot, don't get me wrong, there is a lot to be questioned in The Shack, especially if you read the book.
Yes.
And I would say, that's a little bit more concerning. Because when you read a book, you're dealing a little bit more with the actual ideas that are presented and with, when they have dialogue and there's more teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's like reading Lord of the Rings. You know, there's some great segments in Lord of the Rings where you teach some really deep insight and they tried to say them in the movie. But you know what? In the movie, when they're saying those deep things, it's like, eh. You know, it's like what you're really concerned about is whether he's going to get eaten by the spider or whether he's going to get the ring. You know, you're feeling,
yes.
right? So that's all I'm saying. When movies, it's more of a feeling thing and you're going to be cheering for somebody, you're going to come away with a particular emotion. Just check that. Who am I cheering for at the end of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee when your kids walk away from Disney's Beauty and the Beast, they're going to be cheering for that particular character. Okay, that's the thing that we're worried about. And it's very difficult to talk,
yes.
to talk them out of that.
Yeah, and I will throw in here from what we know about the scene, this is actually a total side character. It sounds like it's enough of a side of character to the point that, like, they might not necessarily be cheering for it, but they had the experience of seeing that yet again and again.
Again
it leaves them
again.
With the feeling that you
and
said.
And certainly the next time when they come out yes. with Elsa or whoever as
possibly.
The gay character, right, yeah. they're going to be cheering explicitly for that person. And in many of the other shows, you absolutely are cheering for that character. Again, this is not, you got to separate, I know people have difficult with this, you got to separate the sin from the sinner, but mm-hmm. I'm just trying to share how movies work, right? Like emotionally, that's the thing to think about when you're saying, well, should we watch this or not?
And you made an interesting point where you're saying you have to separate the sin from the sinner, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin. In movies, you're not rejecting anyone by being against that. You're rejecting yeah, an idea true. Of a character that's been developed. And I think that we need to remember that, because sometimes we identify so deeply based on that emotion you keep talking about that we forget this is actually isn't a real person. And it's okay to say that's wrong.
This is a hugely important point. The reason we're here, you know, you wonder, how did we, in a blink of an eye, go from, for instance, Barack Obama being against gay marriage when he ran for, like, that was not that long ago. The majority of people in the country were against gay marriage, including our president, Obama. To now, you can lose your job essentially forever having admitted to thinking about being against gay marriage. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. It never would have happened without the shows like Will and Grace, Modern Family, all of these mm-hmm. other shows that presented those characters that we mm-hmm. loved and we walked with them and they were gay and the lifestyle was so tremendous. Even the term gay is strategic, right? Mm-hmm. And so just emotionally, yes. that's how these ideas advance. If we were, and I don't want to spend, you know, too much more time on this, but if we were to sort of peel back the actual veil on the gay lifestyle, it's not like that. I'm sorry to say. Mm. It just isn't. All right. Before we end the show, Timmy, you may have heard that there was a little bit of uproar last week, in particular from a Washington Post columnist, apparently, who took umbrage with the fact that President Trump ate his steak with ketchup. Did you see this?
But didn't he also ask for it well done?
Oh, yes,
I think
I believe that.
He asked for it well done. And I think
well,
and he was saying he needed a sippy cup to
yes,
go along
with
it.
Yes, with a sippy cup, because who else would eat their steak? And you know what? We're not into the politics, but the food judgmentalism. I just want us to think about this briefly. I almost want to come back to this another day. I love this topic too. But the food judgmentalism in our culture is at an all-time high. Like, if I go to you, and you're in San Diego County, I'm in Orange County, and there are certain circles, let us say, that if I were to show up with, you know, a McDonald's soda or something, or not a Whole Foods bag, right? Or you mean you didn't go to Trader Joe's for lunch? Where else would you have gone to get your, right? There's a sense of heavy, heavy judgmentalism in our culture regarding food.
Yes. And, you know, I just have to throw this in there because I could sound like a major hypocrite talking about this. I struggle personally with autoimmune disease and stuff regarding food. And so I know the harm that's been done and the serious medical issues I've had. So I know I myself can be a little bit prudish about food, but it's because of the experience I had. But what you're saying is so real. It has turned into this judgmental attitude.
And full disclosure, my wife and I shop at places like Trader Joe's. She is very health conscious. She has she struggled actually with some of the similar things. Health-wise, we eat very healthy. You won't see us at McDonald's. It's not a slam on McDonald's. I mean, it's just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
But I'm interested in how, in a culture that is supposed to be so non-judgmental.
Yeah.
That we're so obsessed with food. And Mary Eberstadt, who I know we're both fans of her, and her book, Adam and Eve After the Pill, she has a whole chapter on this, on how food and sex have changed places. And she says, I'm going to give you a thought experiment. Think about a woman in the 1950s in her kitchen and what she would think about food. Well, she might have some favorite things that she ate, but most of it would be rather, you know, somewhat plain, out of cans. She wouldn't really think about it. Like, she wouldn't care what her neighbors were eating. Right.
That's true.
If they had some other diet or they wanted something else, it was like, oh, well, that's a little bit weird, but I'm not going to judge you over what you eat. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where maybe I'm health conscious, maybe I'm not. I may think that that's not a good decision for you to be eating fat like all the time, or your 20 sodas a day. I may think that's not a good idea because it's unhealthy, but I'm not going to morally come down on you as if you had, you know, sinned in a big, big way. Right. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, how would that 50s woman think about sex? Oh, well, if the neighbor had cheated on her husband, or if the husband had cheated on his wife, or if they had had a baby out of wedlock, or this kind of thing, she would actually have a very judgmental approach to that, in the sense that, well, listen, there's right and there's wrong. You transgressed an objective moral value, and therefore, I'm not going to judge you in the sense that God is, maybe, but I'm going to say that's wrong, right?
There was a morality with sexuality that was seen across the board for the most part.
Right. And as we've learned more about food, frankly, that's one of the reasons it has become, you know, we're more conscious about what we eat. Yeah. But we've also become more uppity in it.
Very much so. Right? And you know, we mentioned in a show recently, we were talking about how millennials have this tendency to be more willing to help. They have their own self-discipline type of religion. You know, a lot of them are entering into this Buddhist type of mindset, this meditative self-knowledge, self-awareness. I have some very close friends and family members who have this attitude. But man, if you eat something and I eat really healthy that's slightly off, they're like slamming me.
Yes.
And I get so mad. I'm thinking, you're not even married and you're living with your girlfriend. Like, how are you harassing me about my morality and food?
That is exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly the point. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what Mary Eberstadt said. But that's what strikes me when I read this. Okay, so we're all uptight now because somebody had ketchup with their steak or something.
Poor President
Trump.
Oh,
my goodness. It's the end of the world. What a bozo.
Oh.
Yet, we don't care at all. We have no judgments about sex.
Yeah.
Not arguably, but a much more important topic.
Yes.
A much more important topic. I'm thankful that we're, in a sense, more judgmental about food as we've learned more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But why are we not even more than judgmental about sex? Because we actually know a lot more about that too, frankly.
Well, and at the same time, a lot of the conversation goes between we're judgmental about food and what goes in our body, but we're even willing to use contraception that does more damage than the food that people are rejecting.
Hey, speaking of which, a little bit of a selfish segue here, Timory, but I got to share the story about my new documentary that we're in pre-production.
How's it going?
Well, so here's the thing. It's called Unprotected, and it's a story about the sexual revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tracing it all the way back to the contraception battle, really.
Yes.
It's the early 20th century, huge battle over whether or not contraception should be a thing. And Margaret Sanger, that was her big deal, right? The founder of Planned Parenthood. And eventually we got the pill and widespread acceptance of contraception. And it's been a disaster.
Yeah, so you're doing a documentary.
So we're doing a documentary on this. So I put it out there last week. We have a budget of $79,000, started in Indiegogo. Well, I got this great news. So on Thursday, I was contacted by a major Catholic media organization. We won't name them yet. They're totally excited about this thing. They want it to happen. They're like, this needs to be made. We need to get it out there. What they have done is offered to finance half of it.
Wow.
So they put up, it's basically a matching thing. They've put up $40,000 on the proviso, if you will, that we get the rest of it. So now instead of looking for $79,000, we're actually only looking for $39,000, which seems like a lot, but actually, you know, it's doable. We have a big audience.
Well, and this is going to be so helpful for people who maybe, one, don't understand the history of how we've gotten to the point of gender ideology. It has to do with contraception and sexuality and abortion to begin with.
Go to reversetherevolution.com. We've got $40,000 in matching funds available.
Yay.
And so if you can help get us closer to that mark, we're going to get this movie made and I think have a huge impact on the culture. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for being here.